106 FM Talk 106.5, and it's Mobile Mornings on this Wednesday. Governor Ivey in the presser yesterday was saying a lot, saying this.
And I'm as eager as anybody to get our economy back open, spinning on all cylinders again. But again, we have to be careful and cautious in what we're doing and do it in a smart, productive way.
Actually, I don't know what she was saying there, but I do know that not reopening the state any earlier than April 30th, and this, of course, on the backdrop of Georgia opening and Tennessee to some degree, and really, if you look at what the report was last week from the lieutenant governor and other groups out there, they're saying reopen Alabama, but governor is saying not so fast. Is it the right time? You look at the numbers in Alabama for COVID-19 cases. Is it the right time for the governor to reopen? Well, that's one of the questions we'll talk about with our buddy Jeff Poor. Of course, you read his work in Lanyap, Breitbart, Yellowhammer News, host of the Jeff Poor Show, and joining us now. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean. How are you?
I'm good. So should the governor, is April 30th the right date?
I mean, that's above my pay grade. What I would say, I think... There's a lot of people out there that think that's too late, and there's some people that are, maybe qualified. Lieutenant Governor one, Cosmo Brooks is another. There's a few members of the legislature I think that are on that way of thinking. And here's the problem for the governor. I don't think she really cares what these people have to say. That this is, she's got a plan and she's got the idea, and she was the one that was elected to make this call. She is not really even going to consider input, but the problem with that is she boxed herself in a corner. And you remember very early on when Ainsworth was raising all these objections about preparations and not having enough equipment, mm-hmm. It turned out not to be necessarily a concern. She made the statement that we don't need criticism, we need solutions, and here come people with solutions, and she seems to dismiss them. That press conference yesterday, really strange, because it wasn't that we didn't get a... It wasn't that we said, well, you know, let's open up early, or let's open up later, or let's open up when we said we would. We don't have a timeline yet. And yeah. I find that at this point, not even to have a tentative timeline. It could change to be, why are you having this press conference?
Yeah, I think, I mean, come on. She's having the press conference because what happened last week, right? I mean, she's having the press conference because she told us they weren't going to have another, I guess, major one till the 28th. Now we had that one yesterday that has to deal with the fact that Georgia opened back up and the report that came out from those senators and lieutenant governor last week.
Right. So that's, you know, that has a lot of people wondering what's going on. Meanwhile, Sean, think about all these people that are starting to protest. And I've been saying this feels, this is when I first started coming on this radio station. It feels a little 2009, 2010 to me that there's a conservative populist uprising, if you will, out there. And the weird thing about it is here, it's not Barack Obama in the White House. It's Kay Ivey in the governor's mansion, which you have this sort of grassroots organic thing going on, questioning the government's role in all of this. Rightly or wrongly, I'm not making that judgment on the policy, but you do have people that are, and it's coming from the right, and that to me is a very strange place we're in.
Okay, I want to get around to the right or wrong on it, but the numbers of people. So I had your compatriot Dale Jackson on the show Monday to see what the Huntsville rally looked like, and he said he had ridden by there and there were like 10 people or something like that. Seeing pictures out of Montgomery yesterday, didn't seem like many more than that. So it seems like this idea of the reopen Alabama rallies and this pushback, it seems to be way bigger on social media than it has shown itself to be in person. Am I wrong in that, or have you heard other information?
Well, keep this in mind. They closed down a 2-block perimeter around the State House of the Capitol for yesterday's rally. So I don't know that you were able to get a good sense about what's going on, but yeah, fair enough. It's we're in lockdown season for the coronavirus.
Civil disobedience thing. You shouldn't say I'm going to be civilly disobedient and showing. Oh well, I'm not supposed to leave my house, so I'm not going to go protest. I mean,
do conservatives practice this level of civil disobedience? Usually, that's an instrument of the left. I'm just saying that maybe you want to, you think it should be downplayed or whatever, but
no, it just should be reported accurately. I don't want to doubt. I'm the guy that likes protests. You know.
Yeah, but let's take away the number. Talk about the sentiment out there, and where that matters. Not so much in the imagery and all of that. Where it really matters, I think, is where this kind of lines up with the politics, the elections, and what the legislature will do. If this legislature thinks there's some kind of a movement afoot enough for them to take a bigger step and take away some of these powers. I mean, these are the things you need to think about, maybe. I would say if they think that pulse is out there, we're still a couple of years away from the next, you know, state-level election, but you always want to look at the politics of this thing and the way it's being perceived, not by, you know, necessarily you and I all the time, but by people in power.
Okay, well, and I'm not always on here, nor are many people always cheering Governor Ivey, but I could say if you look to the White House for direction and look at President Trump, I could probably pick through the last week and find you clips that make it sound like what KIV is doing is the right thing, and I can find you tweets and a clip that makes it sound like she's doing the wrong thing. So you can make the argument both ways.
Absolutely, but where do you think it's gonna? Where do you think the natural destination will lead us? That's what you. I mean, when you think about it, and we could make these arguments to people until we're blue in the face. What do you think? Take all this out of the equation, rightly or wrongly, and all the policy out of it. What do you think the temperature is in the state right now? What do you think the mood of the people are? Do you think that I'm of the impression aren't really impacted directly by it. Maybe they know somebody but for the most part, I think most people in the state, given if you just look at the proportionality of it, don't know anybody, and they feel like they're being punished for that reason. Now, some places, I think, it's different. It varies from state to state to state, locality to locality to locality. But I think overall, if you just look at, let's not even look at the whole state, let's just look at the Republican electorate that really controls a state where you have super majorities. They, I think, to me, it seems like they want to get opened back up, and they don't like that they're being kind of shrugged off by people in power.
You know, Jeff, I also think that a lot of Alabamians realize the risk of going back to work in this economy. But as more business owners and workers decide that, they need to start making money again, they need to get their businesses open again. We've seen stories with a couple barbershops over this past week. I wonder if more businesses, you know, en masse decide that they're going to reopen regardless of what the current orders are. Would the state, I mean, would they just fine everyone? Or if people just wanted to go back to work and went to work, what do you think would happen?
Well, we know one business tried to do this at Orange Beach or Gulf Shores One, and it was a restaurant. I think they lasted a few hours for the Department of Health, which has purview over a lot of these, food service places, shut them down. So they didn't really get, you had a civil authority or maybe not quite a law enforcement coming in and shutting it down. It remains to be seen what will happen. The barbershop story is really interesting. Real quick, the guy who'd owned it, you know, he had done a few radio appearances, but it was Arnold Mooney, the guy that ran for Senate. It was the legislature for that district. Also, you had Gary Palmer and the mayor of Hoover all involved. And it's my understanding they just begged this guy not to do it. They didn't want him to be that first crack in the dam and get people to start defying law and have a real ugly situation. And keep in mind, in Hoover, they've already had some tough times with that shooting at the Galleria a couple of years ago. They don't want a lot of civil unrest. Like, the right or the wrong or all that will figure itself out. But I do think there's potential here for some kind of civil unrest if people can't open back up.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, you know, if an entire block of stores or an entire town decide to reopen at the same time and they're doing it as responsibly as they can, you know, wiping everything down, spraying the Lysol, only allowing so many people in, what would the optics be of that if law enforcement came in and started issuing fines or shutting them down, turning off the water or the AC? I mean, how would that look?
Well, I think it would be bad optics no matter what all around. But, you know, Mobile County and Jefferson County, I think, have their own public health departments, and they get to make that call. If it's statewide and you have a Republican administration doing it, I think it looks really bad. but maybe not as bad if Randall Woodfitt in Birmingham does it, and maybe a little less so in Mobile if Sandy Simpson does it.
Yeah, it was, you know, yesterday the barbershop there in Gulf Shores, it was shut down, was not a person, though, that had any kind of political, I mean, well, all I know is I watched the interview. It seemed like a woman who just said she was frustrated. She opened back up. She could stay open, what is like 4 hours, and then they shut her down. And, you know, it's maybe you get that coming in, and like one here, one there, and then tomorrow it's four here and five there. It's, it, I don't know. And does it behoove the governor to get in front of that and just be like, oh, yeah, we're opening back up? Or does it behoove the governor to keep this enforcement up? So,
well, even more so, what Florida and Georgia, to our neighbors to the to south and to the east, and they, you see one thing happening there and another thing happening here, what does that do to the dynamic?
All right, coming right back, we'll talk about this more with Jeff Poore and also get some of your text on here. And coming up after 8:30 and the news at 8:30, Michelle Malkin joins us as well. Lots to talk about with her. I want to, with the, you know, the idea that was brought up last week on the show by Jeff Sessions about a immigration moratorium during these tough times on unemployment in the states. President then picks this up, says he's moving forward with it, but now there may be some carve-outs in this, and we'll talk about that with Michelle as well, and more with Jeff when we return. Right, 822 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Sean and Dalton and our buddy Jeff Poore. Of course, read his work in Lanyap, Breitbart, Yellowhammer News. Check out the Jeff Poore Show on WVNN. And that's in Huntsville. And we're talking about the governor's response yesterday and the timeline for getting businesses back open. I mean, this is truly, and I mean, this is something you should know, I guess, when you ask for the job. But the situations like this for elected officials, I actually do have sympathy for a lot of them with different opinions here, because you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. There's always going to be somebody who says, oh, that is absolutely the wrong thing to do.
Yeah, so, but that's just part of it, right? And I just, the politics of it is fascinating to me, because we don't, how's the public going to react, I guess, is the question. And that kind of drives, you know, these knee-jerk reactions that we see throughout political history. So, I, you know, this is a weird time when you're going to have, I think, be it big or small, the public out there is just not feeling it with what, or some of the public is. Maybe they are feeling it, and we just don't hear from them. They're the silent majority. But whatever that might be, the perception to me is right now, the public, how's public reacting to Kay Ivey and how her handling of this right now. Here's what I think the key will be, Sean. I think we need to watch Florida. You need to watch Georgia, see if they have any spikes, if they regret what they've done. If they do, then she looks like a she looks like a genius. If things go on as normal, she just looks like a big government type of Democrat.
You know, and she's been got congratulations from Senator Jones yesterday. You know, that was interesting. He was the first. I didn't think. Did Shelby congratulate?
No.
Okay, so just Jones. All right. Here's the problem is going forward. You mentioned something about, do they see a spike in cases in Georgia or elsewhere? I keep going back to this. It was just a little clip from like 2 weeks ago, but Senator Kennedy was on, Senator out of Louisiana, and he was talking about getting business back open, but he had a refreshing, he's like, listen, I want business to be back open, but we got to realize there is going to be another spike, and I'm not epidemiologist, I can't guarantee there would be, but I would imagine there would be. That kind of information, I think, is refreshing. Even if people who want to get things back open, if they have the doctor saying, yeah, this is going to lead to another spike, get that messaging out there. Even if it's not popular, it's important saying, listen, we're going to get things open back up. By the nature of this, we're probably going to see an increase in number of cases. I mean, repeat that. Let people know that. And then people, you know, then gauge their temperature on it.
Well, I still think people just want to open back up. I think
they would, but at least you've given people the information.
But how much is that? Right. Yeah, fair enough. And you kind of laid the groundwork there for that. That's fair enough.
So you don't right back down. So you don't panic and close right back down.
Well, there are people that think that we should have stayed open the whole time. You know, they look at South Dakota where the curve looks like it's flattening as well. Why didn't we just stay open the whole time and the consequences be damned? If you're at risk, you need to take the proper precautions, be it stay at home or wear a mask or whatever that might be. You got to, you know, this whole notion, it rubs people the wrong way that we're all in this together. We are all in this together, don't get me wrong. But for a lot of people, I think it implies that you don't get to control your destiny. And in a conservative state like Alabama, where, you know, I think self-reliance tends to prevail, I think for a lot of people, they just don't like being told by the government what to do, and that's where you're seeing these uprisings. And look, you're seeing them in other states. I still think there are people in Alabama that they don't like what this has done. They think this is an overstep, be it fairly or unfairly. It's all about the perception, and at the end of the day, how people feel about it. You can't really quantify right now, but you need to get a good grasp of that, because that's how we are governed.
Let's say in 3 weeks after some of these states start reopening their economy, we see that spike from people going back out into the real world, or even later this fall, if we have a second wave of the coronavirus. Once the economy is turned back on, is it even possible for them to shut everything down again without massive political consequences?
I don't think so. It just depends on the spike. If we're talking Italy a month ago, or are we talking, you know, kind of where we are right now? I think we're going to be doing this mask thing and the social distancing for a brief while, and it probably isn't going to go away as soon as everybody would like, at least until the vaccine is available and out everywhere. So yeah, it's going to be tough, but it's going to have to take, I think, a really seismic change in the casualty count. But I think we gotta. I think. For the most part, governments have got a good idea of what to do, how to handle it, and keep people kind of separated and prevent the spread of it. It's a much different moment in history when we open back up than it was when this thing first started, and we didn't know as much about the coronavirus, COVID-19, as we do now.
Right, just a couple minutes left here, but I want to switch it to money, and Senate getting whatever it is now. I keep losing the numbers at 400 and
I think 468.
468 right billion. Okay, another 468 billion into the
483. Sorry.
483. Yeah, what is it amongst friends? And more funding in here, which is important to so many small businesses, and then they got hospitals in there, and this, that, and the other. These are all things that I can argue right now today that are needed to keep the economy going. But how I know I'm a broken record. How the heck are we going to pay for this long term?
I think we print our way out of it. You're not going to raise taxes, right? You inflate your way out of it, or you just kind of you should borrow more money, right?
Yes, but where is the number? I mean, I know the Keynesians make fun of me, you know, and people that like me that worry about that deficit thing. But if there's no number that's too much, then heck with it, you know. Let's hyperinflate here and just move along.
I think that's what's going to happen. Hyperinflate out of it, and that way you pass the burden on to everybody, because everybody has to, you know, they have to spend money on whatever it might be on these commodities. And it's a, you know, inflation is a tax that is very regressive, I should say. But there's some, you know, and I don't know how serious this discussion is, but there's some talk about maybe, you know, getting some kind of concessions from the Chinese. I don't know what happens there, but, you know, it's figuring out these deficit questions right now. That doesn't seem to be on the front burner for a lot of people. Maybe it's time our mutual friend Mo Brooks comes on and we get him to talk a little bit about that. But right now, you know, the way they passed that first $2 trillion bill, and you just had a handful of objections to it, I think the federal government's going to be a dominant force in the American economy for a while.
Can't disagree with you, Jeff. As always, man, I appreciate our discussions, and we'll talk again soon.
Hey, Sean, thank you for having me on.
All right, Jeff Poor. And speaking of which, we'll try to get, it's always rousing fiscal conservatism fest when Mo Brooks get talking, so we'll probably get that. Maybe now people start listening. I don't know. Do I have a better solution right now, as our small business, my business right here, is in the pipeline for PPP, but has yet to see a check? You know, nobody wants to have the door closed in front of them. When do you say no? When do you stop that spending? One of the questions we will ask of Michelle Balkan. She joins us next, right after news on Mobile Mornings.
8:35 on FM Talk 106.5. You're listening to Mobile Mornings. Let's head over to McConnell Automotive and talk with Mitch McConnell. Hey, Mitch.
All right, Dalton. Good morning, buddy.
Hey, good morning. I want to remind people and have you remind people that you still have that awesome deal that was passed down by GM.
Yeah, we really do, Dalton. So many people have taken advantage of it. For people listening, buddy, this 0% interest for 84 months, and I've never seen that before. And so, awful situation with the COVID-19, but it's really a great opportunity for customers that will shop our website, McConnellAutomotive.com, or, you know, call us. And basically what that means, you can also defer payments 4 months. So it's a perfect time, saving big. We got a few of these remaining Mardi Gras trucks, and all people have to do for, you know, man, we're bringing vehicles, Dalton, to people's houses and letting them shop with no touch. Everything is very simple, online or calling us. And these are the biggest savings I've seen in 5 or 10 years on our Sierra trucks and Yukons, all kinds of things, buddy.
Amazing deals right now at McConnell Automotive. Thank you, Mitch.
Y'all have a great day, man.
You too. That's Mitch McConnell. Go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, or online, McConnellAutomotive.com.
All right, and I want to welcome to the air. We mentioned at the end of the last segment, joining us right now, a name you know from conservative, I would say conservative opinion making out there, a columnist, a business person that has created some of the websites. I can go down the list. You'd like, I know that one. Columnist, you've seen her on television. You've probably read her books as well. It's a real treat to have Michelle Malkin joining us in person this morning on Mobile Mornings. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Michelle, there's a lot to get into here, and I want to, because I was looking at some of the some of your activity on Twitter on this, because we, about a week and a half ago, when Jeff Sessions was on the show with us, he said, hey, I've got this this question here, this idea about limiting immigration right now, because he and I were talking about the unemployment rate and kept going up and up and up to where we are now. And he said, what if we just have a moratorium and limit immigration during this period of time? We got to talking about that some. Then this week it's really stepped up as President Trump has picked it up and moved with this. But it's not, are there riders on this or exceptions to this immigration moratorium that we need to know about?
Yes, unfortunately. And of course, I greeted the initial tweet with a lot of hope and expectation, but I always manage my expectations because there is a confluence of forces in the Beltway swamp that puts America last. And unfortunately, many of those forces are embedded in the West Wing. A lot of the big businesses, the moneyed interests, Silicon Valley, big agricultural, the universities, and they're doing everything in their power to sabotage this very brilliant and necessary idea, the idea of stopping the massive influx of foreigners, millions of whom are taking jobs away from Americans across the wage scale. Jeff Sessions is an invaluable resource and scholar on all of these issues of mass migration that have been undermining our national security, our public safety, and of course, the wages of American workers. So here's the thing. President Trump gave his press briefing yesterday, and he acknowledged that his so-called immigration ban, his so-called suspension of immigration into the country, will only affect green card applicants. And so that means the millions of temporary foreign workers, whom all of these big businesses have an insatiable appetite for, will be completely exempt. And of all the workers that should be at the forefront of a freeze, it's exactly those temporary workers. And that's what Jeff Sessions called for last week, a freeze on employment-based immigration. And there's only a small percentage of green card applicants who would be coming into the country for work reasons who would actually be affected. And in fact, the vast majority of people who are applying for green cards are already here. So it's the illusion of a moratorium. It's a lot of hype about a moratorium, but really, to borrow a phrase from the South, it's all moratorium hat, no cattle, Sean.
And when you talk about the different parts of the economy affected or not affected by the moratorium, are we talking about, and I know there are more nuances, but H-1B visas, those kind of jobs?
Yes, and just to make clear, and I know that a lot of your listeners are already fully aware of this, but for those who are not, the H-1B program was created in 1990. It was pushed for by a lot of the big businesses that want low-wage Chinese and Indian workers who work in basic jobs in tech. Okay, it was sold by big business as a way to bring the best and the brightest from around the world. But essentially, we're talking about coders and programmers that Silicon Valley and these tech companies and a lot of big business companies that have, of course, IT units like insurance companies, Harley-Davidson, utility companies, Disney, which a lot of people became aware of in 2016 when everyone realized the outrage of American workers who were forced to train their inferior foreign replacements before getting their severance packages, a condition of their severance packages, and the indignity, the humiliation, and of course, the insanity of this kind of policy that puts foreign workers ahead of Americans. And at a time during this crazy pandemic when 22 million people are out of work, when record numbers of unemployment claims have been filed in your state, I just saw the figures, 164 million paid out now in unemployment claims, it makes absolutely no sense to continue bringing in foreign workers who are taking away jobs from people who are now jobless. And of course, I think even more urgent, all of the people who are here now on H-1Bs or L-1s or B-1s that have been laid off themselves and now are being advised by liberal immigration lawyers that they're eligible for stimulus checks. So in other words, we're subsidizing laid-off foreign guest workers instead of supporting American workers.
Well, if you're just joining us, talking to Michelle Malkin and talking about what we talked about yesterday, this immigration moratorium, but seems like this is not monolithic. There are exceptions aplenty. And you're talking about also agricultural side of this, so agricultural workers, they can be exempt?
Yes, and this is largely because of the lobbying of big business cronies to the State Department and the Department of Agriculture. Sonny Perdue has been a huge proponent of bringing in thousands and thousands of guest workers, largely from Mexico, to do these jobs. And it is a complete lie that Americans, native-born Americans, don't do this work. And in fact, the data shows that 1-2% of the agricultural workforce is immigrant. So they threaten. They say that, oh, we're all going to starve and the fields are going to rot and the lettuce is not going to get picked. It's just not true. It's hysteria to induce this panic so that they can get what they want. It's agricultural workers, it's seasonal workers, the kind of jobs that American teenagers used to do decades and decades ago before the J-1 program, cultural exchange visas were exploited by businesses that didn't want to pay fair wages for American workers.
Michelle, is it your contention that, because I'm thinking back to maybe the last, I'm making it, in probably last 2 weeks, maybe it was 2 weeks ago, 10 days ago, or a series of stories ran here locally, local, and then, of course, from national sources, that food rotting in the field stories, that farmers in Florida can't get this out or Alabama can't get this. Do you think that those were AstroTurf? Those weren't real?
Well, I think that there's a lot of exaggeration and hype. And, there is no such thing as an American worker shortage. Anyone who knows basic economics knows the question is, at what wage? At what price? And I wrote a book called Sold Out with a former computer programmer turned lawyer for American workers, John Miano, where we dissected this propaganda that, there's all these worker shortages and all these different industries and fields. And, the problem resolves itself when these employers don't have the option of selling out to every other foreign country. And it's more urgent than ever that American citizens deliver a message to these employers that they can't continue to do that in these kind of conditions. You know, it's not just the economic conditions of 22 million people out of work. It's the national security implications of bringing in foreigners who then have access to all sorts of data, for example, or who are in these meatpacking plants and farms. You know, this Chinese-owned meat plant in the Midwest was one of the huge centers of outbreaks of the virus. And there are all sorts of other diseases that have been spread by illegal alien workers in our industries.
I want to pick your brain on something that's not every day I get to have you on. So one of my concerns is this seesaw balance. A couple of them. Number one, returning to business in the United States, getting things back open while being cognizant of the disease or the virus out there. At the same time, this question about where to go forward here in spending. Because we're small business. We're one of those businesses that, you know, were in the system before the money ran out for PPP. And obviously, to be competitive and stay open, that check is important to our business. But I still have to ask, how the heck are we going to pay for all this? I mean, I'm not anti folks like me and the American people, but I also have to worry about when the bill comes due on this. How do you have any idea how we manage this debt on top of what we've already accrued?
Well, you know, the forces that be in Washington have essentially become just a free fall printing press for money. And, of course, those of us who are truly limited government conservatives have known that the D.C. machine has been mortgaging our futures and squandering our so-called retirement funds and finding ways to spend money hand over fist. I mean, it makes drunken sailors look like austere, austere people. So it's very concerning. It's concerning what the Fed is doing, and all of these bailouts of massive Fortune 500 companies and big business at the front of the line, ahead of small businesses. And you mentioned that I'm a small business woman myself. I've been self-employed for upwards of two decades now. We're the ones that get the shaft because we don't have lobbyists whispering in the ears of people ensconced in the top echelons of power in the White House.
If we could all small business folks like us, all ever agree on who our lobbyists would be and what our message would be, we'd be in business. But we're so balkanized that, we are the...
Well, that's, that's the spirit of American entrepreneurialism, and it's a double-edged sword, isn't it?
It is, for sure. Before we wrap up here, we've got a couple questions here for you, because I know you've been vocal and about what's going on in the runoff here for Alabama Senate, and we've got Jeff Sessions, and we've got Tommy Tuberville, and it's interesting because, I mean, here we are talking about this immigration moratorium idea that I would argue came from Jeff Sessions that has been adopted but now corrupted in Washington. But it's Tommy Tuberville that has the endorsement of President Trump. How do you navigate that?
Well, it's a circus. And how you explain it, I don't know how to navigate it. All I can do is tell people the right path to take there based on my experience on reporting on the most important existential issue of our time, immigration and our sovereignty. All I can tell your listeners and you is we need to have a radar that helps us detect who is truly for America first and who is not. And President Trump's instincts are undoubtedly and certainly America first, but it is a function of having to survive in the Beltway swamp, that you are constantly surrounded by con inkers, I call them, conservatism inkers, who make a lot of money preaching the principles that we agree with and then sabotaging them and undermining them. And I think that's partly what's going on here. And I'm trying to inform people about Tommy Tuberville's actual positions on immigration and national sovereignty. He has given a previous interview, and I've shared the clip on Twitter, and I'll retweet it out again after our interview is over, advocating that we bring in 400,000 Indians into our country. This is insane. Mass migration is not only putting American workers at the bottom of the ladder, but it's also turning America blue. And people understand this. I started out my journalism career in California. California turned blue because of mass amnesty, because of all of these crazy liberals giving these magnets of benefits to illegal aliens and prioritizing them over citizens. Texas is turning blue. Virginia is turning blue. Why is this happening? It is demographic overwhelming because of all of the greedy people and identity politics mongers who want to destroy America.
So, but, and just have a minute left here, but Tuberville's saying that everything's taken out of context, that he is lined up with President Trump's policies at every step.
Yeah, there's nothing out of context of lots of the interviews that I've seen, all of the wishy-washy flip-flopping on whether the DACA illegal alien dreamer should get some sort of pathway to citizenship. He's made noises about that. And so the bottom line is he doesn't know what he's talking about. And in these times, the last thing we need is somebody who is very impressionable and has no core principles on this most important issue. I have been following Jeff Sessions and reporting on his invaluable work dating back to the 2000s. When we had to fight George Bush on a massive amnesty, if that amnesty had passed, and this is my most important last point that I want to make to you, if that amnesty for millions of illegal aliens had passed, there would have been no way that President Trump could have been elected.
Here we go. Michelle Balkan, of course, a blogger, opinion maker, and most important, small business person here in the United States, chiming in on Mobile Mornings. Thanks for your time, Michelle, and let's do it again.
My pleasure. Thank you, Sean.
All right, coming right back to wrap it up here on Mobile Mornings. Remember, FMTalk1065.com. The online opinion poll question brought to you by 1-800-GOD-CHUNK. Should Governor Ivey reopen the state before the slated April 30th date? We'll talk about those stats when we get right back. FM Talk 1065 at Mobile Mornings. Thanks to all, Michelle Malkin, Jeff Poore. Most importantly, thanks to y'all. I've said this, you know, a couple times, and it's from the bottom of my heart, as serious as I can be, because people will send us great texts and emails, and I love it. Really, y'all have been, y'all's words mean something. But thank you for letting us do this. This is what we do. This is what, I mean, this is what Dalton and I do. This is what all the people on the radio, we're broadcasters. This is how we serve the community and try to bring all the different opinions out, y'all's voices out, different ideas, try to get questions answered, you know, whether it's something about something locally, nationally, internationally, the laws surrounding it, when you get your money, when you can reopen your business, what's the danger of the disease, what the numbers are. That's what we're digging in. That's what we're doing here. But we thank y'all for letting us bring that to you. And it's been something with the podcast numbers that have been downloaded. Thank you. The number of listeners sticking with us and the amount of new people. Welcome aboard, new people. We're glad to have you here. Thank you. Thanks for letting us do this.
Amen. And Sean, over the last month or two, we've talked to, you know, a number of public figures that have a lot of information on coronavirus and the economy, but we get just as much good information from listeners who are specialists in a number of different things, and from all the way down to the local level, which is what we love hearing from our neighbors right here in Mobile and Baldwin counties. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and we're going to dig back into it as well today. What about, you know, the Senate signed off on the $463 billion additional funding, but the House still has to. We'll talk to our congressman, our member of the House, AL1's Bradley Burns, going to join us at noon today. Chris Pringle, state rep, is going to join us at 12:30, plus some history of our fair city with John Sledge at 1.